Okay, we're back for the Saturday evening session, otherwise known as Burning Man OA version. I always like to, on Saturday nights, if at all possible, unless I get totally rejected by the person who I usually ask, is it okay to do this in case there is a particular group that has a problem with that. I'll tell you a quick story before I even get going. I got asked by the Palm Desert, I don't know what it was, that they were going to do a whole thing on body image and sexuality, and they wanted me, and they were going to have me and a woman come do it. And I go, okay, sure, that sounds good. And they go, now you're going to do the one for the men, and she's going to do the one for the women. And I'm like, you're missing the whole point here. This is not shame. It's not whatever. And I said, I don't really want to do it that way. So I'll just tell you, I'm going to talk tonight, and I don't have all the answers here. I just have my experience and open myself up about myself and the things I've gone through, things I'm still going through, and then hopefully it'll open up and everybody will have a chance to sort of, either tell me I'm the freak or I'm like all the rest of you, and we'll get going on. So when I do this, I call it sexuality, but it's really not sexuality as such. It's a group of topics, and I think it's a group of topics we don't talk enough about in program, because I think a lot of the things I'm going to talk about tonight are underneath what a lot of people ate over or relapsed over or had problems with, I just think it's important. Also, again, like I said, when some people come in and have success but then end up going out again, I think some of it has to do with this. It drives that engine of emotion, I think, that causes chronic relapsing. But underneath that umbrella phrase of sexuality are a lot of different subtopics, and I'll just mention body image, okay? How we view our outside selves, our bodies, our appearance, our attractiveness to others. Self-esteem, which I think is sort of the mental version of body image in terms of looking at how we feel about our inner selves, our behavior, our personalities. Talk about dating, for those of you who are still in that situation, putting yourself out there, meeting someone, trying to meet someone, making yourself vulnerable. And then love and vulnerability, finding out how to overcome that fear of intimacy that a lot of us have or had, and finding a way to trust another person. Relationships in general, how you go from being with yourself to then having to share your life with another human being. That's a big transition for it was for me. Intimacy and sexuality, taking all those things learned from these earlier topics and bringing them into an adult, intimate relationship. And like I said, I don't have all the answers here, but I want to throw them out and talk about them. And by the way, I'm not going to be sitting here, this isn't going to be X-rated. I think I have the ability with words to get across things that may be a little dicey, but it's not going to be, it's not going to be either a sex ed class or a porn. I know, darn. Oh, shoot. Did anybody have a big book with them? Oh, there we go. Thank you.
Well, at least first 165 pages.
That's all I need. Okay. I'll just start off with a joke, okay? And this is for you guys who've heard it before, you can let it go. Guy goes to his sponsor, and he's having problems with sex, and he doesn't know how to handle it, And, of course, the sponsor does what he always does, is send him the big book, because the answers are in here. And, of course, those of you who know, the ironic thing is a lot of the story about sex is in the big book on page 69. Make your own joke. So he says, I want you to go home. You got these sex problems. I want you to go home and read page 69, and it'll help you, So the guy goes home. The trouble is the guy's dyslexic. So he gets home, and instead of reading page 69, he reads page 96. And let me read page 96 to you. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. Like I said, it's an oldie but a goodie. I always love that. And again, I'm going to talk about my experiences, feelings, and things that happened to me. But, you know, after 35 years in program, in addition to my own stuff, I've spent a lot of time talking with a lot of my friends in program. And because this is a program that's, what, 80%, 90% women, they tend to be female and talk about the things that happen to them. And some of these I'm going to relate are obviously going to be from a female perspective. And obviously that's not me. No sex change happened here. And I will just relate some of the things I've heard from them, and occasionally things I've gotten feedback from people at when I've done these kind of things. I'm also going to mention during this thing, I'm going to mention the phrase opposite sex. Now, if you're gay, you know that it's just a matter of translating. This isn't about men or male or female, other than it's about the people we're attracted to. I really believe this is a multiple-level problem, just like with the food. You know, it's very complex, and I believe it causes a lot of relapses, and it's behind what, causes some chronic slipping. Because I think for a lot of people, while they want the recovery, there's another part of them that is terrified about what's going to come with that. You know, somebody said once, you know, if you're going to sign on to recovery, you just got to strap in, and it's going to go where it goes, you know? And especially because for a lot of people, this whole component, the sexual component, is a really scary thing, either from their childhood or things they've had to deal with. This whole mating dance has all these different facets, rejection, when, as guys in particular, we have to go out and face rejection. And boy, all of a sudden, I'm that fat kid on the playground being picked last from the team, even, many years in, and then dealing with body image and self-esteem. And, I remembered that hurt. And then now I've got to, for a guy, I have to risk going out there and putting myself out there and possibly getting that same rejection. And before recovery, it was, it was really hard because, bam, I'm all of a sudden right back there. So in talking about body image and attractiveness, as you guys heard me say, I was a fat kid, and all my life, weight and attractiveness were just totally linked like this, To me, it was all about weight. Weight was the only determinant of attractiveness to me from having grown up and always felt unattractive. When I get to this weight, things will be different, and it had nothing to do with any other part of my personality. Obviously it does, but in my head, that was all it was about. And again, I would do that comparing myself unfavorably to anybody who was a good-looking guy or a thin guy. I would always feel, the less than, it was just really tough, that comparison thing. It never dawned on me that some people, that people look at things other than weight as being things that are attractive. And so, for me, that weight was such a barrier, It was such a barrier about dealing with people in the opposite sex that, it took me so long because I thought everybody was as obsessed about weight as I was. And the reality is, they're not, not everyone. So I'll tell you the story about when I talked the other night. I talked about how I went through these different stages and that I have been, in addition to being a compulsive eater, I have been a bulimic and I've been an exercise bulimic. And I mentioned that for one really short time, I was anorexic. Okay. So here's the story. When you grow up fat, and I had that real short time when I started drinking where I got thin, but it was so short, it wasn't any long-term thing. But when you grow up fat, the concept of goal weight, the phrase goal weight, you can almost hear angels singing, like, goal weight, the sun is coming through the clouds, Oh, this is going to be, this is the thing. This is what I've been waiting for my whole life. Well, I come into OA, and I'm 26 years old. Like I said, I have that metabolism of a hummingbird, and I got a goal weight in mind. Well, I hit that goal weight really fast, okay? Not like in a week or two, but pretty fast in terms of my term of recovery. And I got down And I had all these ideas of what was going to happen. I was going to lose the weight. I was going to hit that magic number. And all of a sudden, I was going to have no trouble talking to women. I was going to be smooth and suave. Women were going to be clawing at my ankles as I went down the street. All of this insane fantasy stuff. Of what was, I was going to turn into like James Bond. Hello, Dale. How are you? You know. Somehow I was going to get a British accent. I don't know what that was about. What happened was I got to that goal weight, and I got to the goal weight. Nothing changed. I didn't like myself anymore. It wasn't easier for me to talk to the opposite sex. I was just the same person at that weight. And so the brainiac I've been talking about all weekend says, well, that must not be the right weight. So I lose another 10 pounds, and I don't like myself anymore. I don't feel any better about myself. I have no self-confidence. And then, another 10 pounds. And this was the one time I went through anorexia, because finally people are coming up going, dude, eat something. Are you okay? You know? And I can look now and say, I know I almost assuredly had to do that. I had to do that to get what people have been saying for years in this program, which is there is no number on that scale that's going to make me like myself, that's going to make me more self-confident, because if it's about a number on the scale, it's never going to be the right number. And I had to realize this really was an inside job. Yes, I wanted to get to this goal, and I got to it, and nothing changed, that I had to do more work than just lose the weight. I was, again, you know, I lost the weight, and I was still crazy as a loon, you know. I used to say, I'm thin as not well on the hoof, you know. That was me in the beginning. And so it took a little more time. I mean, I talked about how I... you know, I lost most of my weight pretty quickly. The thing that took the longest to lose weight was actually like my quads, because I've been carrying around an extra 100 pounds, and that went away slowly. It has nothing to do with anything other than the fact the only other weight I had to lose was up in here. That was, I'm still a fat guy. And I really had this body dysmorphia that couldn't accept that I was at a normal weight, you know? And that took a long, long time, you know? And, you know, and the other thing, you know, I lost this, and part of it is that I grew up, it was just me and my brother. We had no sisters. I had no input from females about this. You guys were like this strange foreign thing that I didn't understand at all, you know. And as a result, I didn't know any of the signals. You know, they talk about signals. Jerry Seinfeld does a whole bit about how you women just think we're way smarter than we are about things like signals. We're clueless. And I really was, because I think about how... thank you. I think about how I was in the early days, and I have no idea. Just part of me, I'd love to get in a time machine and go back and just look from afar at the situation, because I might have been getting a lot of attention, but I had no idea, because again, I'm the fat guy. I'm the fat guy who has no idea. And it's really hard. It's hard for us guys, because you know, if you think you see somebody who thinks, you think that they're interested in you, as a guy, I just got to tell you, you sit there and you go through your head, is she interested in me, or am I just delusional? You know, no, really, because, and especially when you're trying to make that decision, having been a fat guy and still thinking of yourself as fat, you go, no, you're delusional, you know? So it was very hard in the beginning to get that, you know? It's a funny story. This friend of mine, Jerry, she lost like, I think, 150 pounds, okay? And young, and she, when she lost the weight, she got reasonably attractive. Well, attractive, okay? And, I don't know where that came from. Well, I wasn't attracted to her, but it had nothing to do with her weight. It's just, one of those things. But she tells a story of going to a bar, and she's with her girlfriends, and she's talking, and she looks across the bar, and she sees this guy looking over at her. And she goes back to talking to her friends, and a few minutes later, she looks over, and the guy is looking at her. And she looks, and she goes back to trying to talk to her friends, and she looks over, and the guy is looking at her. And finally, she says, hang on. She walks around the bar and walks up to the guy and goes, what? What's your problem? And he goes, well, I sort of thought you were attractive, and I was trying to get up the nerve to come talk to you. And the point that Jerry came back with was, it never dawned on her. It never dawned on her like it never dawned on me that somebody, and it took years of that. And I still tended to, you know, a lot of the relationships I've gotten into over the years involved somebody else making the first move for me, because I had such a problem with that. But the other thing about weight and loss, and I'm not saying this to pander just because there's only one other guy here, but I might pander at some point. But is I truly believe women have it harder than men when it comes to this subject, because I was clueless. I had no idea if anybody was interested. But if you're a woman and you're young and you're overweight and all of a sudden you start to lose weight, there's attention. And it may be very well unwanted attention. And it may, it's one of those things. As much as some of my friends wanted it, all of a sudden getting young and attractive, it makes your life infinitely more complex. All of a sudden there's way more things involved, And it's got way more things to deal with, and maybe just sitting at home on a Saturday night with my ice cream and my television is easier, And I think it was too scary, and the number one reason I think is that the thing about attractiveness is we don't get to choose whom we attract. It throws out a big net. And so if I get if one gets attractive as a female more than a guy, you don't know what that fishing net's going to bring in. And especially some guys can be very aggressive. And again, that can be a very, very scary thing, some guys who don't want to take no for an answer, that would be very scary. I mean, even if I thought about the reverse situation, and especially the other thing, and I've seen so much of this in program, a lot of my female friends who had this stuff had to deal with unwanted sexual attention at some point when they were younger, and sometimes as children. And when that kind of thing happens, and now you've come in the program and you've lost weight, all of a sudden there it all is again. And it's really scary. And maybe it is better to just go back to eating my ice cream on a Saturday night. And at least I have the food to turn to. And the thing about that is we live at the 21st century, Things have changed. No means no. There's no argument about that anymore. We had the deal. It has been brought to the forefront, and things are different. And hopefully, we start to deal with, and we start to, through program, get the tools that allow us to deal with that better. But a lot of, like I said, a lot of this, and like things I was talking about earlier in the day, sometimes these things are just threads back to the past. And you're a 30-year-old woman 1 minute, and then bang, you're getting aggressively hit on, and you're that 8-year-old who got molested. And how hard that has to be, I don't, I can only empathize with my friends who went through this kind of thing. So some of the weight is about, here, let me put this on, A, make myself unattractive, B, give, for some people it's about, give me some heft, give me something that makes me less vulnerable, sort of like in nature, there's the animals that will puff themselves up, whether with feathers or the fish that puff themselves up, as a way to go, leave me alone, And sometimes it's the opposite, the idea of somehow becoming sexually invisible, Again, I talked about when I was overweight, I was invisible to the opposite sex, I could be standing there, but the most I'm going to be is the friend, right? But women have that too, with not only being overweight, but some with anorexia sometimes, it's another way of feeling sexually invisible, All of a sudden, I am not the female form, and maybe that will make it easier, The other thing, I have friends who said one of their real problems was they developed early. They became women earlier than all the other girls, and therefore got all the attention of the guys at a time when they were young and had no idea how to deal with this. Maybe it wasn't molestation, but at an early age, having to deal with all kinds of attention that was hard for them. And the other thing I've had a lot of friends deal with in program is, and I mentioned it yesterday about you want to find out what you're eating over, quit eating, more than one, a number of my friends came in and had to lose the weight before they all of a sudden started to have these memories, repressed memories, and all of a sudden, like, wow, this is what happened. A lot of them got into therapy because therapy, sometimes a professional can help pull that out. And then once it's out, it can be dealt with. But until then, it's just all of a sudden some unreasoning fear over something that may not be, you know, that, you know, it's not benign, but it wasn't anywhere near the amount of fear it should give out. You know, and again, like a lot of that is, and I heard this so many times, I was a perfectly normal eater until I hit puberty. And then all of a sudden, you know, and so like I said, I think a lot of it, you know, and some, I think sometimes it's a matter of, I don't want to go down there and look. I don't know what's there. I think there's something there, but it's too scary to think about looking at. And the reality is, I was told by a sponsor a long time ago, there's nothing up here that can hurt us anymore. It's the past. What can hurt us is if we don't deal with it, and we don't deal with it, and we end up going out and harming ourselves some more, you know? You know, as somebody said in programs, sunlight is the best disinfectant, you know, to be able to get this stuff out, you know? And the other things was emotions. Like I mentioned earlier with me and emotions, you know, it was so hard because of all the crazy emotions. I really tried to stuff them all down, you know. When I used to watch Star Trek, you know, one of the things was, oh, Mr. Spock, poor Mr. Spock has no emotions. And I was like, I want to be that guy, you know, because it just seems so less, you know, less complicated to have emotions. But I realized a lot of that was the stuffing down from when I was a kid. You know, and so all of these things lead to the food problems and the weight problems. But I can tell you the answers are here if you're willing to do the work. And again, this is one of those places where I believe in that thing of it takes a village. You know, you may have trouble. You may have an older sponsor who has trouble identifying with some of this stuff. So maybe you need to find a younger, attractive woman who's got a certain amount of time in program and go up and say, how did you handle this? How did you go about it? You know, but there are answers there, you know. And the whole thing with attractive, you know, it's one of those things that I've dealt with my whole life, again, always feeling unattractive. And I'll tell this story that I was part of my home meeting in Darien. I had a crush on this one person in program. I just thought she was gorgeous. She looked a little like, I don't know if you know the actress Christine Lotti. She used to do Chicago Hope and others. But she looked like her, only even more gorgeous, in my opinion. You know, she was a doctor's wife and everything. I mean, nothing was going to happen, but I just, you know, I thought she was a goddess and just thought, I don't know, you know, something about her. Well, I don't know, I was in that meeting for, I don't know, maybe a half a year or a year, and then finally she led the meeting and told her story, and one of the things she said is how ugly she's always felt. She always felt she was ugly and unattractive, and she walks around with that to this day. And it's funny, I was driving home, and I'm thinking to myself, isn't this like a typical OA thing? Here, I think she's a gorgeous goddess, and she thinks she's ugly. But I started thinking about it. What was it I thought was attractive about her? Well, I felt she was physically attractive, but she had a great laugh. She had a great smile. She was funny. And all of those, and I thought of all those intangibles is what made me go like, when I saw her. And I got thinking, you know, when she gets up in the morning and stands in the mirror and goes, and looks at herself, she doesn't see the smile. She doesn't see the funny. She doesn't see the intelligence. She doesn't see all the things I saw. And it got me thinking, wow, maybe I have some of that too. Maybe there are things that when I stand in front of a mirror and go, and look at every little part of my body that isn't right or is, you know, I walk around with the wreckage of my past. My body is never going to be like the guys in the ads, you know. I'll just tell a quick story. I started about 3 years ago. I really decided to make a commitment to exercise and all that stuff. So I started exercising. And then I also got weights. They have these weights that it's really cool. Instead of having the huge barbell set that you got as a kid, they have these things like a dial. And you can set them. And then they go, you know, anywhere from like 10 up to like 50. So I started working on weights. And I, you know, do weights like this and this and that. And I started getting pecs here. The trouble is all those years of having extra fat, instead of having like defined pecs, I sort of look like I have boobs. That's one of the wreckages of my past. I have other places on my body. And if I stand in front of a mirror, do I look at my face? Do I look at this? No, I look at every one of those goddamn things I don't like, you know? And maybe that's human nature. Maybe everybody does that, but I know that's one of the things I do that makes me feel unattractive, you know? I've always joked about attractiveness and said, you know, I believe I have this thing called the 98% theory, okay? The 98% theory is this, that there's 1% of the world that are like gods and goddesses. You know, people on TV and you know, everybody from the opposite sex looks at them and goes, oh my God, gorgeous, right? And then there's 1% of the population that is, you know, probably like physically deformed, something, you know, really, you know, and nobody really thinks they're attractive. And I think all the rest of us fall into the great 98%. Some of people are going to find us attractive, some are not, and that's a lot of, you know, that's what it is. And that, you know, it's always going to be that way. And that was the strangest thing. I mean, like, I'll give you an example. Most guys, you know, their idea of beauty was Cindy Crawford. Cindy Crawford never did a thing for me, right? You know who I find attractive? Whoopi Goldberg. People go, oh, she's so ugly, but she's so funny. She's got a great smile. She's sharp. I happen to find her attractive. The point being, you realize how subjective this is. And, you know, and it's hard to then pull that part of yourself out, but to realize, you know what? I could get to be the perfect specimen, and there's still going to be people of the opposite sex that aren't going to have the slightest interest in me. It may be somebody I'm interested in, and I just got to, I had to sort of accept that, you know? But it's also about so many things. It's also about how you are as a person, you know? And, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Los Angeles and places like Beverly Hills with these, you know, the kind of people that are there. And I wrote a script once, and one of the things it was a script about Los Angeles and about the entertainment business. And the line I had was, some of the ugliest women I've ever seen were gorgeous. You know, meaning they were gorgeous on the outside, but were totally ugly inside and self-absorbed or acting not like nice people, you know? And there was a movie a bunch of years ago, I don't know if you remember this movie called The First Wives Club, which was all about, and it sort of took the idea, oh, guys just toss women aside, the first wife, and go get another one. And I always thought, you know, I know an awful lot of people who've, you know, been married a long time. And I always thought maybe that First Wives Club were people who were attractive outside, but not on the inside. And as they got older, now they're not attractive on the inside or the outside. You know, instead of being good people, we're all going to age, you know? We're all going to, at some point, not be the, even if whatever weight we are, we're not going to be the Playboy centerfold or the, you know, the guy in the, what was that, the Old Spice commercials? Remember that guy? My wife had a crush on him. And I remember talking to a sponsor once. I'll tell you a funny story. I was talking to a sponsor once about how I didn't, you know, I don't know, I can't meet anybody, I don't think I'm attractive, or you know, and he looked at me and said, are you straight or gay? I go, I'm straight. He says, so you don't have any idea what a real attractive guy is, do you? Because you're straight. Well, I guess maybe not, you know? But then when it, like, something like self-esteem, you know, self-esteem, this is a mindset that didn't go away just getting in program. This has been years of work, and I've talked about it, like, a lot, you know. And part of that was, you know, I was abstinent for a long time, and it took a long time to be able to be slightly comfortable around women, which is bizarre, and one of the things that helped the most was being in a program that's 80 or 90% women. You either learn to get comfortable with women, or you're going to be the guy sitting in the corner by himself, you know? And that helped. Maybe it was like the version of having sisters when I grew up, that I was able to get a little more comfortable. But I still, it took a long, my wife is the first one that I really, the one I'm married to now is the first one where she actually in the beginning said no, and I was willing to go past that. Not psycho stalker, but no, because I'll tell you a story. I called myself the anti-stalker. And what the anti-stalker was is if I asked you out on a date, you might come back with me and say, No, I can't because I'm doing something, but I'd love it to do it another time. Well, you got the, nah. I'd be like, no, never mind. It's okay. I was just, just friends. I wasn't talking about any, because that will, and you know what? That personality is the exact same personality as a stalker. They just come around to the same thing. It's about having unacceptable ability to deal with rejection. So the stalker just keeps going and going. I ran in the other direction. But it was about rejection and how I couldn't stand rejection, you know. Not very good wood. It doesn't hold up very long, does it?
That's the difference between hardwood and softwood.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's softwood.
Well, you see, we're having a discussion of sexuality, and Margie starts talking about hardwood and softwood. So, I'm sorry, comedians Tourette's, I warned you about this at the beginning. I couldn't resist. Good one? Okay.
Shut her up.
Yeah, it's going to be on YouTube.
Not for very long, but...
But, you know, again, this whole nervousness is about my lack of self-esteem, my inability, you know. When I approached a woman at all... there we go. She's got some chips. we're going to be giving out chips later. When I approached a woman I was interested in, it in some ways, I mean, lousy self-esteem meant that it never occurred to me that she might be interested in me too, you know. I used to say I would walk up to women like Oliver Twist, you know, with the bowl. Please, sir, I want some more, you know. I remember saying once, go up and try and talk to a woman, get her interested in me. I sort of feel like a used car salesman trying to sell a piece of shit car. And all I care is, can I get the car off the lot before it falls apart, you know? And there was a part of me that always felt, and that's a pretty sad thing to say, you know, because what was in there is once she gets to know the real me, she's going to be gone, you know, because that's the way I felt about myself, you know. I had a shrink once when we were talking about stuff. I was talking about my trouble with that, you know, and so he said to me, well, what do you find attractive in a woman? I said, well, the fact that she shows any interest in me whatsoever. And he was like, you know, John, we got to bring that bar up a little, you know. And I was like, wow, you mean two people get? Well, that just makes it exponentially complicated, you know. But, you know, part of what that was about in looking at this back in later years is that the problem was there was no me in here. You know, there really was no me. You know, I was whatever you wanted me to be. You know, I don't know if you remember, there was a movie years ago Woody Allen did called Zelig, and it was all about, it was an allegory where whoever the guy was around, he physically changed. You know, if he was around somebody who was Chinese, he would look Chinese. If he was, you know, with an Orthodox, he'd look Orthodox or whatever. And it was an allegory, and it reminded me of me, you know. You know, if I'd meet you and you started talking, and, oh, you're into Chinese opera? Oh, I love Chinese opera. What the hell is Chinese opera? You know, it was about all that because I had to get you to like me, so I had to like the stuff you did to even have a chance. The idea of I could say, well, geez, that's not my thing, but it's okay, I couldn't do that because there really was no me. It was all about whatever you saw in me. You know, and it's a pretty, you know, it was a pretty sad thing. And the other, so here's again, I'm open to myself and telling you stuff I would rather not tell, but it's stuff that's true. I would approach women I wasn't attracted to because they weren't threatening, you know. I ended up meeting my first wife, and one of the things I was attracted to is I somehow was comfortable talking to her. And she would have made a great best buddy. In retrospect, looking back on it. But the fact that she wasn't particularly... she was not unattractive, but I wasn't attracted to her, made her somehow safer. You know, if it was some gorgeous woman, I probably couldn't have gone up to talk to her. And it's a sad thing to say, you know, but that was... I was so intimidated about it, you know. The other thing, you know, I mean... You know, and I don't know if this is true of every guy, but in some of the guys I know, there's an unspoken strata concerning, being able to go up and talk to a woman who's a lot more attractive. Like, oh, she's out of my league or something like that. And I had a friend, she was in program, named Sandy, and Sandy was very attractive. She had been a what they call a Raiderette. She was a cheerleader for the when Los Angeles Raiders were there. And she, I was like the best friend, you know. I was the guy she would come cry on my shoulder, and she would talk about how all these guys she met were total assholes, and they were egomaniacs, and they treated her like garbage. And I remember saying to her one day, and this is just an opinion, I said, this is coming from a guy, you are attractive. When you really doll yourself up, you're attractive sitting in an OA meeting in sweats on a Saturday morning. But when you doll yourself up, because I remember I went to her 40th birthday party. She asked me if I would videotape her 40th birthday party. So she got all of her Raiderette friends together. And me and another guy from OA were helping. We're like, okay, we died and went to heaven. You know, gorgeous women. And when she got dressed up, she looked gorgeous. And I said, you know, maybe if you did it just a little less. Maybe because what you were getting, you were attracting, were the guys who thought so much of themselves and thought they were so hot that they could come up and talk to you. But you know what? Most of them were assholes. Most of them were morons and self-absorbed and all that. I said maybe if you just toned it down a little, maybe a little more of a regular guy might not be intimidated. And so here's the upshot of that story: Sandy ends up going Orthodox. I said, you know, I know what I said, but I didn't mean that far. But she's happy and married and lots of kids and all that. But, you know, it was just an absolute true thing about that. But, yeah, and you know, I wish I could have seen, because as I got older, I hear, oh, you know, women really like humor and things like that. And I realized, geez, I'm a funny guy. Maybe I had more going for me than I thought. But, again, having grown up as a fat kid, it was all about the weight, and it couldn't dawn on me, you know. You know, it's so much about, I think, attractiveness. A huge part of attractiveness is how you feel about yourself, how comfortable are you in your own skin. That is a very attractive thing, I think. I had a friend, Scott, okay, and I'm still friends with him. Another stand-up comic. Scott came into the other program I was in, and he was left 500 pounds. Well, he lost a bunch of weight, but he got maybe to 350, maybe 300. But you know the thing about Scott? He was a chick magnet. I mean this. And he's just a happy guy. He grew up with a family that didn't ever give him a trouble with his weight. And he was just comfortable with himself. He had no trouble talking to women. He was a singer with a band. And he had women all. He was constantly. And I'd be sitting there at goal weight going, what the hell? You know, I don't get it. But it was about the fact that Scott felt okay about himself, and I didn't. And it took me a long time to get that. And also that the whole body dysmorphia thing. I didn't really get for a long time, you know, how I really was, you know. You know, but this is, I think a lot of this, though, it comes from our society, too, doesn't it? You know, you look at these things. A friend who was in the other program would always tell the story. The point she hit a bottom was she was at a train station to meet some friends, and this little girl looks up at her and goes, "Mommy, she's fat," like that. And she talked about how, you know, incredibly embarrassed she was. But you know what? That little four-year-old girl was just making an objective statement. She's fat. You know, or she could have said she's blonde or she's tall, right? We're the ones who took on the shame about she's fat. And we got that from society for the most part. And, you know, trying to take, you know, get it back. I heard somebody say once, take back your beauty, you know, and to realize it's not all about the weight, you know. You can only lose the weight at a certain rate, but you can start loving and liking yourself anytime you want. Again, that number on the scale is not going to do it, you know. You know, I know for me when I got into, and I mentioned we were talking about the fourth step, I had to do a sex inventory, and I didn't have a lot of things on it because I didn't have a lot of experience. But I do know there was one person I think I really hurt, because I ended up meeting her, we went to bed, and then I never really called her again or did much. And I could look back, I couldn't see it at the time, look back and realize I probably hurt her a lot. But I felt so shitty about myself, me not being around, who cared? You know what? It didn't dawn on me that me doing that kind of thing would have bothered her. And it really wasn't about trying to be hurtful, but realizing I didn't think anybody would care, if I did that kind of thing. Let me just see. And there's other things that cause other problems other than just weight. I have a friend, Judy, who's a stand-up comic who she's very tall. And she told me once, it isn't just about the weight. When you're a tall woman, there's a lot of problems. My old therapist, we were talking about weight once, and he says, well, I have a lot of the same kind of problems as you. And I'm like, but you're normal weight. And he stood up. He says, John, I'm 5'0". And you have no idea, being a guy at 5'0", there is a thing. It's literally inbred, I think, in our amygdala somewhere. Women go, that's not, it probably goes back to caveman. This guy won't be able to catch me a saber-toothed tiger for dinner, but there's a lot of those kind of things that make us not feel good about ourselves, And I know today, so much of this is how you feel about yourself. I mean, when we go out, my wife loves to get dolled up. And I'm a guy, and I'm like, I don't know why you bother doing all this stuff, Or it'll be like, you're mainly going out to see a couple of, sometimes she's going out by herself, and she's getting all dressed up. And I'm like, well, you're just getting together with a couple other women. And she goes, John, women get dressed up for other women way more than you guys. But the bottom line is that I've learned to quit saying anything about it because I know it makes her feel better. It makes her feel attractive. And that's, of course, exactly, the kind of thing I want, And the other thing I do is to remind her I think she's attractive, remind her, that. And, I love her. I always say that there's nothing like just walking up behind someone you're in love with and get it, you're hot, and walking away. little things, just to, because you don't want people to pull it out. You don't want to pull it out of people. You want to have that kind of thing, and I know that makes for a good relationship. And it's again, this is a long time in program. Self-esteem, doing esteemable acts to the point where you like yourself better. The other thing that I've seen is the idea, and I think I did some of this too, I'm not going to really put myself out there until I'm perfect, until I've hit a goal weight or whatever. And I remember over in the other program, we had this girl, Gabby, who I just thought was the cutest thing, and she was cute the day she walked in. Some people, when it comes to weight, it's more or less of a factor. And she just was bubbly and funny and a great smile. And I thought she was perfectly attractive the day she walked in. And she kept losing weight and losing weight. And she would sit there going, when I get to this goal weight, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And I finally walked with her after a meeting once. I said, Gabby, you're the only one who knows that you're not at goal weight. You are so close, nobody would think about it. What's going on? And I really think it was about that fear of declaring victory, because now I have to go do something. If I keep making it about when I've done this and when I've done that, I can put it off, because that putting off thing is really scary, in the end, it comes down to growth in the program, growth in all areas, including the spiritual side. The faith that your higher power didn't bring you this far to drop you on your ass. You're never going to have anything you can't handle. That's what I learned in program. Program didn't say I would never be hurt, that I would never experience disappointment or rejection. It said this program will teach you can handle it. You have people to help you. You have a support system now. You have a sponsor. A lot of us have what we call the God Squad. We have people we can call on. And that any of this stuff that may be fearful, you can get through, Again, I mentioned the fourth and fifth step will help me, and the sixth and seventh where I started to pull this stuff out. And then eighth and ninth, because one of the other things I'm going to talk about tomorrow, I cleaned up my side of the street, and all those things go to making you feel better about yourself. And, again, that fear of so many, the fear of not being good enough. The other story I tell, is that my first wife, she was not the quintessential female, For example, she did some acting. She was in this movie where it was a science fiction thing where she had to play an androgynous character. And the fact that she could pull that off says something about whether she was a textbook female or not. And she was very androgynous looking. And I realized in looking at it later, part of the reason I found that okay is if she wasn't a textbook female, I didn't have to feel bad about being a textbook male. Because there's so much of the roles we all get in society about what a man is, what a woman is, you know. There was this great movie years ago. Do you guys remember a movie called In-N-Out with Kevin Kline? The whole upshot of the story is this guy who's a straight drama teacher. One of his students wins the Academy Award for playing a gay guy. And he said, and he's up on stage and he says, I want to thank Mr. So-and-so, my drama teacher from high school who was gay. And he's like, I'm gay? You know? And it was all about because he didn't fulfill the textbook thing. Now, I got to tell you, it had the lousiest ending in the world. I'm almost sure it was focus grouped because in the end he is gay. But it would have been so much richer a story if he wasn't. Because what the story was about is he likes musicals. I like musicals. You know, does that make him gay? I don't like football. Does that make me gay? You know, but all of these things. And I spent a lot of time growing up feeling, you know, less than as a man because I didn't fit that textbook definition. You know, I don't have a competitive streak. I would go out sometimes to bars and shoot pool. And I just like to shoot pool by myself. And you know, all these guys, you want to play? No, not really. And they'd look at me because that's what guys are supposed to do. We're supposed to be competitive. No, I just like to play by myself. Yeah, it's okay. You know, but that's, you know, again, it was about not, you know, one of the reasons this I did this is because or that I felt less than was because I didn't feel like a textbook version of myself. You know, and again, I had this whole, you know, beggars can't be choosers, whoever's interested. And that actually went on for quite a while. Like, you know, a couple of my relationships were people that sort of came up to me. You know, thank God we're living in a different time. For shy guys, it actually comes in a little handy. But it also, you know, it brought up another weird thing with me is that I ended up dating somebody for about 3 months that she came up and asked me out. And I didn't know how to say no, and she kept it going when there was no attraction or anything. And I looked later and I said, well, you know, I think if you've been rejected your whole life, all of a sudden you're going to become the rejector. And how you feel, knowing how that feels, makes it really hard to do that, you know. And I had to deal with some of that, you know. The other thing I'll tell the story about is, I always say, be careful of what you poo-poo in life. It'll come back and get you sometimes, okay? I mentioned being the asshole, newly abstinent guy in OA at 26 years old. And, you know, what's wrong with these women? You know, why can't everybody just, you know, get abstinent like I would, right? Well, one of the other things I would hear women talk about losing weight and, you know, having that be fearful and going out again. And I remember saying to a friend, what the hell's with these women? They're not happy when they're fat. They lose the weight, and now they're not happy with that. These women are never happy, right? Well, fast forward to me working as a stand-up, right? I'm married. I'm on the road. I'm on the road a lot. I'm on stage in front of everybody. I'm sort of the center of attention, okay? Let me make it clear. Comedians are not like rock stars. You know, people are not throwing their hotel keys up on the stage to us. But sometimes there are possibilities. There are occasionally people who will come up. And the ability to do something was there. All of a sudden, I gained 30 or 40 pounds. You know, be careful what you make jokes about. And I look back because I saw this was me. If I get heavy, they won't come up and bother me, and I don't have to deal with am I going to be unfaithful or not, you know? So it was another one of those, you know, strange things. Another interesting one that happened in part of my experience, back when I would sponsor women, and we were talking about this at dinner, that I don't sponsor women anymore. I sponsored this woman over in that other program, and she, her name was Brenda, and she had been a big shot in that program, became one of those star circuit speakers. And Brenda's story was she was the star circuit speaker, and then she, at some point, after a number of years of being the star in that program, lost her abstinence and had gained some of the weight back and was slipping and sliding, and that's when I became her sponsor. And I got that whole backstory after I became her sponsor. But then the more she talked about her program and what had happened, she was like me. She had always been heavy. She had always been heavy. Oh, goal weight was going to be the answer. Goal weight was going to be the answer. Well, she went to that program. It was very strict. They promised if you did all this, you would get down to where you want to be. And she did. She got to the goal weight she wanted to be at. So she was a normal-sized woman. It doesn't like you right now. Yes, for those of you who are listening to this, the ash of the fire is going everywhere. We're close to Mount St. Helens, and we're getting a little replay right now. Right? Yeah. What? No, this is Mount Hood. I'm saying, yeah. Well, if Mount Hood blows, this is my last retreat. So back to Brenda. So Brenda had been the star in program, and then she started slipping and sliding. Then I got more of her backstory. That again, she had been overweight her whole life, and she was always trying to lose the weight. And finally, she comes to this program, and she loses the weight, and she gets to the goal weight, and she is a normal-sized woman in L.A. She's a normal-sized 50-year-old woman in L.A. And there she was at goal weight and getting no attention whatsoever. The ultimate fear, I lose all the weight, I get to the weight I want to be at, and still nobody's interested in me. And now I don't even have the food. You know, and I worked with her, and she kept slipping and sliding, and then she sort of stopped coming to program. And I always felt that it was like such a tragic story, yet another one of those ones of, well, what if I, not necessarily that for somebody having that happen now, but the fear of that happening. Maybe if I lose all that weight, and there may not be somebody. So like I was talking about with the thing about plans without action is fantasy, I'll just keep thinking about how good it'll be when I get to the goal weight, but I won't actually work on it because, again, it'll never be as good as my fantasy, you know? And so that was another one of those ones that happened. And then, you know, having to go out and put yourself out there, the vulnerability. And I got to tell you, in between marriages, and I was married once, then I was in a long-term relationship, and then I got married again. But there was part of that where I dealt with dating. And I got to tell you, online dating just sucks, okay? I don't know how those of you who are single, but I always joked about, I said, your first date on somebody you meet online should always be somewhere where there's lots of exits, witnesses, and good Samaritans, just in case, you know. But it becomes that whole thing of, you know, you gotta kiss some frogs. And one of the problems I had with dating is I was in program too long. I had no ability to do small talk anymore. You know, I had lost that. I got used to being able to talk about the things that I felt was important. And I remember going on a date with this woman, and we're sitting there, and I start talking about my childhood or things that were going on. And about 10 minutes into this, I see this look on her face like, too much information, you know. And it was hard. It was hard because program does that to you. You know, I don't, you know, who do that? And the other thing I saw with some of my female friends was a real resentment against the opposite sex that once they got to goal weight and were getting attention, you know, because they'd go, oh, where were you when I was heavy? You know, what the hell, what? I was chicken liver when I was heavy, you know? So, and they had to deal with some of that, which is another thing, you know? I'm talking about intimacy and love, you know, and when I talk about intimacy, I'm not talking about sexual intimacy. I'm talking about real intimacy, you know. Somebody once said sex could be the most unintimate thing in the world, you know. But real intimacy is different. And also, like, infatuation versus love, you know. There's a huge difference. You know, love can be this passing thing. Infatuation can be this passing thing. But love is something that's deep and grows even more. And it's different, you know. It's about sharing stuff, and that was hard for me because, again, my trust mechanism got blown out at a really early age. But if you're going to be intimate with somebody, you've got to have trust, you know, and it brings people closer together. And that's another reason I was taught why men should sponsor men and women should sponsor women, because if you're doing a sponsorship relation right, it is an intimate relationship, right? And the trouble with an intimate relationship is it can start out just talking about programs or stuff like that, and the next thing you know, it moves into something more really easily. And so I think it's something to be very careful of. You know, but the other thing about this intimacy thing is I have to be willing to be vulnerable, you know, and weight sort of made me invulnerable. You know, I heard somebody say once, it's harder to be naked emotionally than it is to be naked physically, you know. And I heard a great story when I was about a couple of years into the program. I heard this story once, I never heard it again. You know, most of the program stories that are sort of program stories you'll hear over and over. This woman talked about the story of the lobster. You know, in life, the lobster has only one real defense against predators, and that's its shell, right? But once a year, it molts, meaning it loses its shell. And the reason it loses its shell is that while the shell is its defense, it also inhibits its growth. You know, and if you think about that in terms of love, I can have a shell, but I'm never going to grow. You know, and I think it's so important to be willing to risk being hurt. You know, nobody ever said it can't happen, but it, you know, you can get through it, but you have to be willing to try. You know, and the other, I'll tell you another one. I find a lot of things in movies that make me think. There's a movie called City of Angels. I don't know if anybody ever saw it, but there's this whole sort of metaphorical thing about, you know, being willing to step off the building, you know, and in a lot of ways about love, you know, being willing to step off. And that, you know, we say we all, using that metaphor, we all have fear of splat, you know, fear of splat, meaning, you know, you go for it and it doesn't work out and you'll feel worse afterwards. But again, with all these things, I think it's a matter of being willing to put yourself out there, you know. When it came to relationships, you know, and dealing with people, I had to look at the, you know, how I dealt with people. I, you know, I always heard the expression, program people don't end up in relationships, they take hostages. You know, I in some ways that kind of thing would happen. And I look at other things. When I was in ACA, they used to have a checklist, and you know, I mentioned that. And a couple of the things on there really hit me. You know, do you confuse pity with love, as you did with the problem drinker? Do you attract and or seek people who tend to be compulsive or abusive, you know? And a lot of times, again, you know, people, you know, I would tend to gravitate toward, I think somewhere there's like some radar knowing I'm messed up, let me find the other messed up person, you know? And or to get in those relationships. You know, I've had friends who go, I don't know, I just have a bad people picker, you know, when it comes to relationships. And I say, well, maybe flip it around and think, maybe you have a bad people filter. Who do you filter out, you know? You filter out maybe the good guys, you know? Yeah, having been the guy who was always all the friends of girlfriends, I go, you know, you women all go after, and I was making the statement when I was younger, you women all go after the bad boys while we're guys are just sitting around here, and then they treat you like shit. Well, there's a reason they're called bad boys, you know. You know, and but you know, one of the things that happens with a lot of us is we end up doing that same thing over and over, you know, because psychologists will say, you know, people will do what's familiar instead of what's good. You know, why do people in abusive relationships get in other abusive relationships? Because it feels familiar, and somehow that felt better. You know, and the other thing on that checklist, boy, you know, do you cling to relationships because you're afraid of being alone? You know, and that was another one of those things, you know. You know, and I never wanted, the other things I never wanted to admit, I was lonely. I would try and put on that brave face, you know. And yet, there I was, and I couldn't, you know, for a long time, I couldn't find somebody. And you know, I felt like, you know, what the hell am I doing wrong here? You know, there was this movie, I forget the movie, but I identified with this guy who said, you know, he kept trying to find a girlfriend, and he couldn't find a girlfriend. And he's sitting there whining to his friend. He goes, you know, even Hitler had a girlfriend. You know. Oh. But you know, I you know, again, a lot of this had to do with working on my defects, you know, and finding somebody who was healthy took a long time for me, you know, to find, you know, two people who want each other instead of two people or at least one of them who need each other to be able to stand separately. I think that's a big part of the key, you know, and it's also about having a self. You know, I remember you know, talking to one of my shrinks about that one day, and saying, and you know, talking about how I couldn't, you know, these fantasies I had about, you know, how if I was different I could be this or that. And he said to me, you know, John, if you changed tomorrow and became James Bond, and you went, met and conquered 99 women in a row, the 100th woman who said no would destroy you, because you have no me in there, and you've got to work on that. And it was really true, you know. You know, I didn't believe I was worthy of love. I didn't believe in myself, and that had a lot to do with it, you know. You know, and it was really hard, and a slightly emasculating, being the guy who was always the friend, too. You know, I was always the friend. You're the friend. I always wanted to go, you want a friend? Get a dog, for God's sakes, you know. The worst one I ever got, I never forget this. I had a program female friend who said to me one day, I like you. You're safe. Oh, here, just cut them off and get it over with, you know? Because it's, you know, what a, you know. And she didn't mean it to be nasty, but boy, I'll tell you. The other thing I'll make a quick statement about is dating in program. Be careful, you know? I actually met my wife, and she was in program, but I didn't even know she was in program then, and because I had dated somebody else, and it really hadn't worked. And the trouble with dating someone in program is you end up with a kind of situation with divorced parents, only instead of deciding who gets custody of the kids, you got to say, who gets custody of the Thursday meeting? You know, who gets custody of these friends, you know? The other thing, we used to have these two people, and don't worry, I'm wrapping up here in a minute. We used to have this couple that used to give these relationships workshops in L.A., and they were a married couple in AA. I remember this guy, Andrew, because he was an actor, and he had this wonderful, stentorious voice, and his wife. And one of the things they talked about a lot of times is the idea of using the traditions on your relationship. You know, I had never heard that before. I love it. Our common welfare comes first. Meaning our relationships comes ahead of any one of our, you know, our wants or needs. And, you know, the other ones, we are self-supporting through our own contributions, and we're autonomous, you know, that you know, I'm not her puppet, she's not my puppet. We are two individuals who want to be together, you know. I heard a great line once. They were talking to this guy from West Hollywood, and he was a gay guy. He'd been with this other person for like 30 or 40 years, you know, which at that time, things are starting to change now, but at that time, for two gay men to be together for 30 years was like amazing, right? And so they said to him, well, what is your key to the long relationship? He says, well, I get up every morning, I walk and stand in front of the mirror and say, hey, you ain't no prize neither. You know, that whole forgive us our trespasses. If I, you know, and I think that's a huge key, is to have couples that accept each other exactly as they are. You know, not try and say, wow, that person's got 90% of what I want. I'm going to take that and then beat the other 10% into them, you know. I think, you know, it's an old joke about the wife, and this is an old, like, vaudeville joke, I think. You know, they get married, and the wife says, I want you to change this and this about you, how you dress. I want you to change your hair, and I want you to change this. And the guy, being very submissive, okay, I'll change this, I'll change that. And so she comes up one day and says, I want a divorce. You're not the man I married. And then just to talk quickly about like sexuality, again, I'm not going to go into the whole thing. You know, again, a lot of us are raised with some of the societal guilt or religious stuff that we grew up in about sex. And I love Woody Allen. Woody Allen wrote this great New Yorker article about, I think he was like the sex therapist. And it was like question and answer thing. And it was like, is sex dirty? And he wrote, only if you're doing it right. But, you know, there's the other thing about it is, again, women have it harder than guys. There's a huge double standard when it comes to sexuality, or at least there used to be. Maybe it's not as much. You know, a guy who's promiscuous, he's a stud, right? And a woman, oh, she's a slut or whatever. It, you know, and the other, I had female friends who were overweight who said, well, you know, they were promiscuous because they thought it was the only way they could get a guy was to be there for them and do that, you know. The other thing I'll say is, you know, with this whole thing, if you are choosing not to have sex, there's nothing wrong with that. And I don't want any of this to say you should be out there doing that if that's not what you want to do. That's the key. Whatever you want to do is the way it should be. And, you know, it's hard. I mean, one of the things I've learned over the years is men and women just see sex differently. You know, we do. You know, there's a whole thing. Some TV show I was watching where the woman's going, was it... you just give out love because you want sex. And he's like, you just give out sex because you want love. You know, and there's that whole thing that happens. And then, you know, dealing with sexuality as I did, you know, started to do that. Having been the fat guy, I had to deal with, wow, somebody's going to see me naked. And they're going to see the stretch marks. And they're going to see the things that I try to hide really well. And that was the other whole scary thing. You know, you can only play the turn out the lights game so much, you know. And that took some, you know, getting used to, you know. And, you know, another just fear of performance in that arena. You know, especially guys have to have that whole thing, you know. And but then women, too, of, you know, and thinking, oh, well, how do I compare to whoever that person might have been with before? You know, it's hard. And when you get married, you know, and for those of you who are married, you know, dealing with sex in marriage can sometimes be hard, too. Like timing being one of those things, you know. If you lead a big life, all of a sudden, you know, it's almost like you've got to set up an appointment for these guys. Have your girl call my girl. We'll schedule sex, you know. But the other thing is, you know, dealing with a long-term relationship of getting out of that rut, you know. This female comic named Carol Leifer used to do something about long-term marriage and sex. It becomes almost like this routine dance. You do that, then I do this, then you do that, and I do this. But to be willing to keep it alive and keep it new, and it's hard. You have to make it. And, you know, this is one of those things where you have to actively work on some of these things if you want to keep it fresh, you know. The other thing is dealing, I mean, to, you know, even as a married guy, to deal sometimes with rejection, you know, like being interested in getting, you know, I'm tired tonight. And even though I'm an adult and I got time and program and I understand intellectually that, there's still a little part of me that when she says, you know, I'm a little tired, that all of a sudden I'm that little kid again. You know, I'm the little kid that's been rejected again, you know. And then I used to feel guilty over things. We'll just add a little more and let's let it go for until we're done. it just ends up being a little hard to talk while we're adding wood to the fire. I would feel guilty over just thinking about things. You know, I would feel guilty about starting to look at another woman when I was in a relationship. Just looking, mind you. Not going after anybody or anything like that. And I remember we had this couple in, they were from Manchester, Connecticut, and Buzz and Shirley. Shirley is this little lady about this tall, and we were talking one day. I think I was up doing a workshop with them, and all of a sudden she's looking at some guy, wow, look at that guy, he's hot, and he's got, look at the butt on him. And I look, Shirley, you're married. And she said, hey, just because you're on a diet doesn't mean you can't look at the menu, which I always love. But I would feel guilty about that kind of thing. But anyway, just to wrap up, I mean, what's the solution? I don't know. I'm telling you about all the various things that happened to me and how I felt. And I think the solution is to keep working on ourselves, to keep working on our character defect, to start looking at all these things and realizing, you know, we're exactly where God wants us, and that there's no number on a scale that's going to change that. And to have some faith, to have some faith in this higher power that you know, we're going to be able to handle this, you know. And sometimes the idea of getting out there, I mean, you know, the Nike thing, just like with the 4-step, to be willing to just go out there and try it, you know. And last thing, I just love this. It almost has nothing to do with anything I talked about, but it's like one of my favorite things in a movie. I don't know if you guys remember, there's a movie called Adaptation. It's by this great writer, Charlie Kaufman. It's these two brothers, and they're talking in a scene, and the one brother is making fun of the other brother who had a crush on this girl in high school, and the brother is taunting the other brother and says, you know, when you walked away, you know, went up to talk to her about something, you know, trying to get her interested. He said, when you walked away, she started making fun of you. And the other brother says, I know, but I loved her. That was mine, that love. I owned it. And even she didn't have a right to take it away from me. I can love whoever I want. And the other brother says, yeah, but she thought you were pathetic. And he says, that was her business, not mine. You are what you love, not what loves you. That's what I decided a long time ago. And I just love that piece of writing. So, again, no answers on any of this stuff. No great, you know, stuff the steps or anything, but talking about me and my insecurities and the things, and I'm hoping maybe it will spur, you know, you guys to talk about this stuff and the stuff that happened to you or your feelings about the things, and we'll just open it up for sharing. And I will turn the recorder off so, you know, the whole internet doesn't get to hear about it.